Here's Ito. Morita. There's the chance, and there's the opening goal. And it's that man who's been such a threat, Kamada, who is going to be denied and disappointed ultimately by the offside flag as he turned away to celebrate.
Yeah, but the question is it clear and obvious wrong? He's going to go look at it. And I think he's given a goal, hasn't he?
He has.
Americas, coming to you live on ESPN Plus alongside Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebastian Salazar. We are together in Los Angeles, and we are together, Herc, in the immediate aftermath of the U.S. and that 2-0 loss to Japan in Dusseldorf, Germany. Was it worth the early wake-up call? It was an early wake-up call, brother. It was an early wake-up call on the West Coast.
I should say 3:30 a.m. wake-up call for your boy out here in Los Angeles, but it's all worth it for... We're here for you.
Yes, it was. It's good training for Qatar, right? Because there's going to be some early wake-up calls, certainly on the West Coast for folks watching the World Cup in Qatar. We got a lot coming for you in this edition of Football Americas. An interview with Memo Ochoa of El Tri and Club America. Lots to cover with him. Mauricio Pedrosa is going to join us as well as we break down some of the key position battles for Mexico ahead of their two friendlies in the international break. Plus, we have some bad news, a big injury in the National Women's Soccer League that could impact the future of the U.S. Women's National Team pool. But let's start with the game that we just witnessed. United States against Japan from Dusseldorf.
Dusseldorf!
In Germany. Quiet stadium. Not a great pitch. 7 minutes in, though. What felt like a good start for the Americans. Serginho Desta, Jesus Ferreira, and... Hercules, ¿qué pasó?
Yeah, Gio Reyna spraying that ball out wide. Serginho Des showing good strength there. A brilliant ball across. And Jesus Ferreira, you've got to be a killer in that box. That is a goal you have to score.
Big news before this game, of course, no Christian Pulisic in the starting lineup. Here's a turnover for the U.S.
Oh, no.
Kubo with the shot. Matt Turner, big early save.
One of the many turnovers by the U.S. back line. Really an unforced error, and it's Matt Turner coming up big there.
So Japan couldn't take the lead early, but a few minutes later they do. It's here in the 24th minute. Turnover in midfield. Daichi Kamada going to get it all alone. Converts. And at first, the offside flag goes up, and we were told there wasn't even VAR in this game. And then suddenly there was VAR, and it was a goal. How about that, Herc?
Yeah, it is another, another really, I guess you could say, forced turnover. Weston McKennie forced to play with his back to goal, gives up the ball. Serginho Dest up high. Matt Turner hung out to dry. It was a recurring theme. There goes the goal. And then again, Weston McKennie back to goal, comes right back down their throat. On this one, Matt Turner comes up with a save, but a recurring theme throughout this game for the U.S. men's national team.
Yeah, Matt Turner there, the big, big stop on Ito. He had a couple of those throughout this match to keep it at 1-0 in the second half. 10 minutes after that, 65th minute, another chance for Japan.
Look at this. I mean, on the sideline, you get doubled, give up the ball. A 1v1 situation right there. And again, it's Matt Turner having to come up big yet again for the U.S. men's national team. It's the way they turned the ball over, whether it was defensively or in the midfield, that just led to chance after chance for Japan.
Never a good thing when your goalie is probably your best performer. 81st minute. Chance here for the United States. Brendan Aaronson just misses.
Yeah, Johnny Cardoza right here. Very good. Turnover that led to the Brendan Aaronson chance. As good as it got for the U.S. men's national team, not even on goal, but it's a shot at least. And then, Reggie Cannon, you cannot do this. You cannot turn your back on the play. Turn your back in the defensive third. Japan taking just care of business. Again, another turnover. Matt Turner can't do anything about this.
Let's hear from Greg Berhalter after the match.
Greg, what did you see from your team today?
You know, I think it was a really competitive match. I think we ended up hurting ourselves a little bit too much in the game with silly giveaways. And, you know, we want a little more personality in the match. Give Japan a lot of credit. Good team, competitive team. They pressed well, but we can do better.
A lot of attention, obviously, on the central defense. How did you evaluate what you saw from that position?
We'll look at the tape and we'll analyze it more carefully. I think there were some good moments, some moments that can be improved, but we'll evaluate it on tape.
What's the one thing you'd like to see most different in the game against Saudi Arabia?
I think it's more personality in the match. For some reason, I didn't see a lot of personality with our performance tonight.
Thanks so much, Greg. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Wow, all right. I was over here sharpening the knives, thinking we were going to have to be the ones giving the criticism. Look at Greg Berhalter. He's calling out his players. He says he wants more personality, not just from this game, but from the next game against Saudi Arabia. What do you think of that? Fair statement from the coach?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's also a little bit on him, right? But fair statement. Yeah, he's a coach.
How so? I mean, how can you have the guys ready when you got no time to get people ready?
Because it's your job to get the guys ready. That's what you signed up for.
Okay.
It's a piss-poor performance.
Really?
There's no two ways about that. That's why you see the long face from Greg Berhalter. But if I'm a player in that locker room and I hear no personality, more personality, mm-hmm. shots fired, my man.
Does it bother you, or is it actually what you need to be hearing right now?
A little of both.
Clearly,
but it should bother you. And if it doesn't bother you, guess what? You've
not
got no personality.
Cup. Right, right.
My father always told me, on the day.
One of those.
On the day, technically, you can be off.
Right.
Tactically, you can be off. Everybody has these bad days. But that personality he's talking about right there, that's the effort. That's the commitment to the cause. If that's missing.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there's some stuff, I think, in this game that you figure you will not get away with at a World Cup. The first half especially, sloppy, lots of turnovers. I know we focused on the back, but I think also out of midfield. Like, Japan took advantage of the few opportunities that they had, but you all go up against better and better competition, what you're going to be seeing in a World Cup, and that's going to be very, very difficult. If the U.S. plays like that, they're not getting out of the group.
No, they're not getting out of the group if they play like that. And if you're England, if you're Wales, mm-hmm. if you're Iran, you're salivating at the mouth of what you just saw, the performance, because they just giving you a blueprint
sure.
of how you can make the U.S. men's national team cough up the ball, which is yep. the recurring theme of this match.
But it wasn't just that they were sloppy, Herc. They weren't dangerous. Zero
well,
shots on goal.
Well, how can you
goal?
Be dangerous yeah. if you're constantly giving up the ball, if you're playing from behind, if you're chasing the game? Now, this is what I will say. You said it's not just the defensive line, the midfield. Let's take Weston McKennie, for example. Usually one of the more sure players in the U.S. men's national team, a player that makes everybody else in a way better. He's yep. contagious in that way. Mm-hmm. When you force, as a team, Japan, Aaron Long and Walker Zimmerman to be the playmakers of your team, and you saw the way that Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, Luca Della Torre, to a sense, were constantly receiving the ball back to goal.
Right.
Blind passes, having to give square passes, hopeful passes, it's coming right back down your throat. This is on Greg Berhalter in a sense because you're trying to force this team to play in a certain way that maybe isn't conducive to certain players. Walker Zimmerman, Aaron Long, can be very good center backs in a certain system. Defend for a system. Don't ask them to do things that they normally don't do at Nashville. They normally don't do at the New York Red Bulls. You're trying to get them to play out the back? Japan, they will take that all day. Hey, let Walker Zimmerman play out of the back. Let Aaron Long be the creator of this game. Get the ball away from Weston McKennie. Get the ball away from Tyler Adams facing goal. Luca Della Torre facing goal. Mm-hmm. That's what you want if you're the opposition. And they played right into that.
Watching this Japan team, there were passages of play. There was some moments of real beauty, right? And I know that we think of Japan as a technical team. We don't really think of them as an elite team. For me, what was maybe the most worrying, if I'm a fan of the U.S., is it felt like there was a real technical gap between the individual players on the two teams. And then in terms of what they were able to do in conjunction, while working together. Like, you saw ideas from Japan that you really didn't see from the U.S. And I always go back to this with Greg Berhalter. That's something we always saw from him at Columbus. There were patterns of play. There was something recognizable.
This progression, this wing play.
We'd see it, right?
You see it.
But we don't see that here, or am I missing it?
You're not missing it. And I would say more concerning than the technical ability, because I think there are players with technical ability. Is the speed of thought.
Okay.
And that's
yeah.
the most concerning
sure.
thing for me,
sure.
is the speed of thought, is the ability to recognize situations.
But why are these guys are playing at the biggest clubs in the world?
Are they the biggest players in the biggest clubs in the world?
No, but I think they're still training at that level where they're playing against the best
in
the world.
Let's put things into context. This game could look very different if you have a Chris Richards on the field.
Sure.
If you have a Yunus Musah on the field.
If you have a Christian Pulisic on the field.
And you know what? If you have an Anthony Robinson on the field.
Totally.
A Jordan Pefuck on the field at some facet of this game. The complexion looks very different. But you have to be worried, not just if you're Greg Berhalter, but if you're a player who played in this game.
Sure. How much of this gets solved with Christian Pulisic's inclusion? Because we see the U.S. 11 here, the lineup that Greg Berhalter went with against Japan. Obviously, Christian Pulisic suffering a knock in training in the build-up to this game.
He would have played if this was a World Cup game.
Totally. Okay. Fair enough. We assume that's the truth. Would he have made a difference, though? I mean,
yeah, let me tell you
is
where
he that
players,
big of a difference to
let
this
me tell
team?
You where players like Christian Pulisic can be a difference. When you are chasing the game, mm-hmm. it is very easy for the opponent to dictate how that game goes. So in games where they can sit back, they can make the spaces tighter, compact, and more difficult for you. Players of quality in 1v1 situations that can draw other players out or take advantage of certain tactical schemes like that are a necessity. Mm-hmm. That is where Christian Pulisic comes into play.
You know another guy who I think kind of fits that bill?
Who?
Is Gio Reyna. And you were really surprised when you saw him in the starting 11. Why?
Yeah, because I was under the assumption that they were managing minutes for Gio Reyna. And I would have assumed he would have come on in the second half. Excited to see him on and play and get minutes under his belt. I think he's going to be a vital player for the U.S. men's national team at the World Cup. And the few times that the U.S. men's national team were actually dangerous, it's off of his play. In the very first half, Sergiño Dest does very well to get that ball to Jesús Ferreira, but the guy spraying that ball, and what a ball, is Gio Reyna. He has these moments of brilliance. You need to get that more out of him. And so getting his feet wet with minutes was important.
Yeah, he played on the wing. Is that his best spot? Is that his best role?
I think you can see, even when he plays on the wing, his natural tendencies are to come centrally, and you saw that in that play. At some point in time, I think Gio Reyna is going to be an eight for this team.
Really?
Yeah, because he's just so creative, and I think he adds just a different element. And I don't think, honestly, you can take Brendan Aaronson out of this lineup.
Right, so he's got to take that spot, the other, you know,
but
the
who do you, winger who do you put out? I mean, Yunus Musa has proven to be so important for Greg Berhalter, and you saw a player of his caliber, what they were missing.
So I wonder if that, obviously, Christian Pulisic, huge asterisk on this result. No, right. Christian Pulisic, you don't have your best player. I think what we really saw here is the gap between Musa to Dela Torre. And I don't want to focus on Dela Torre now, but Musa, what he brings to this team, the athleticism and the quality in midfield. As you said, the midfield didn't really play its usual part.
So the one thing and my biggest criticism of Yunus was the end product. But don't worry about the end product if you can get it from elsewhere. If a guy like Yunus Musa can connect from point A to point C, if he can be that B player, if he can be that connection right there that advances the ball from the defensive end to the final third, which was a huge area of necessity today. A huge disaster for Greg Berhalter was the inability to move from point A to point C.
You mentioned Greg Berhalter. He made four changes at the half. McKenzie, Cannon, Sergeant, Morris all came on. Do you think that was, and I think maybe actually from his post-game comments, it tells us what he was thinking. I thought that might have been like, hey, there's four new guys that I want to get a look at. I want to do some more evaluation. I actually now think when he talked about personality, he was sending a message to everybody.
Absolutely.
Right? If you're not going to come for these 45 minutes, you will get pulled. There won't be a second chance. And I think some of those guys that got pulled are probably looking at this game saying, man, did my chance to either make the World Cup squad or have a certain role at the World Cup just go out the window? If you're one of those four guys that got pulled at the half, you're not feeling great.
You're not feeling great at all.
It's the penultimate game. I mean, this is the second to last chance Berhalter has to look
at. We will talk about this a little more in depth, but when certain players move up the depth chart or get locked in and they're not even part of the camp, that tells you a lot. That tells you about the performance you saw. It was as lackluster of a first half as I've seen from Greg Berhalter in all his tenure with the U.S. men's national team. Last time I saw a U.S. men's national team that played this way was a 3-0 loss to Mexico in New Jersey. Literally, when I thought they were just played off the pitch. You could say Costa Rica in the last game, but that may have been circumstantial. But the last time I truly felt like this was that 3-0 loss.
All right, so real quick here. It's the second to last match before the World Cup, but it's also 2 months until the World Cup. So given that performance,
days, right?
Yes, given that performance on a scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you about the U.S. and Qatar?
1 to 10? 6, because I think my
10 being the worst. So
my expectations for the U.S. men's national team are a little bit more tame than most fans, I would say.
You certainly thought they would do better than a 2-0 defeat against Japan on neutral ground, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. They got bullied by Japan.
Yeah.
On neutral ground. Yeah. On neutral ground. But also, what are they? 1 win in the last 10 away from home?
Yep.
That tells you a lot, right? 0 wins.
Doesn't I mean, a lot of that is kind of qualifying
record.
Oh, they
won against Honduras. But what I will say is, and I repeat, the complexion of this team changes a lot more.
Yeah.
When you got guys like Anthony Robinson, Chris Richards, or you got Yunus Musa on the field, when you got Timothy Weah, who's, I mean, getting locked in without even playing.
Right.
Proving how explosive and how vital he can be to this U.S. men's national team without even playing, Seb.
Yeah.
So the complexion can be very different with a lot of these players on the field.
All right, so let's run through a quick stock up, stock down here of some of the key performers that we had an eye on in this game between the United States and Japan. We got to start, Herc, since it is your show and you are a number nine. At number nine, Jesus Ferreira got the start today. Did his stock go up? Or Herc, did it go down?
It went down, and I'm worried if I'm Jesus Ferreira. He's one of those guys taken out at half, right? For a very informed and hot Josh Sargent.
Yep.
You're a number nine. You can do all these things that we hear that Greg Berhalter values out of Jesus Ferreira, the interpretation of space, the movement, the ability to combine and get others mixed in.
Are you going to tell me goals are important?
Goals are important. and I will tell you this. Guess what?
Yeah.
Goals change games. You score that goal. Now the U.S. men's national team is 1-0 up, and it's
early
Japan.
In that game.
It's
early
Japan
in that
who
game,
has to chase the game.
Yeah.
It's Japan who now has to deal with the way the U.S. men's national team dictates the play. This is a very scorable header.
I mean, give me that. Give me that, the delantero, the forward's perspective. Like, how bad a miss
is
that?
This is a dream ball by Serginho Dest. Your eyes get big right here. He connects on the way down. Okay.
Just mistimes the jump, right?
Mistimes the jump. It's by no means a ball. 9 times out of 10, that should be in. And I think he understands that. And it's unfortunate for a player like him who's under the microscope, especially with guys like Jordan Pefok not in camp.
Yes.
That gets magnified. Goals change games, Sebi. So this is a stock down.
Yeah, I feel like with Ferreira, we've had moments of good, but we haven't had that moment of great yet. And every opportunity here that goes by opens the door for somebody else. Do you feel like Josh Sargent moved his stock at all? In the 45 minutes that he got?
It's a difficult task to come on at half and play when you're chasing the game.
He didn't have a big miss, so it's certainly not stock down
No, it's not stock down. It's about neutral, but if you're Jesus Ferreira or a fan of Jesus Ferreira, you'd be left wanting more.
Yeah, and I think also with Ferreira, you got to think of it. He got the start today. That tells us somewhere where he is in the pecking order for Greg Berhalter. I don't think he's going to miss the flight to Qatar for that miss, but it might cost him some minutes when we come to the World Cup. All right, let's get to our next stock up, stock down. Let's go to the center backs. Aaron Long and his partnership with Walker Zimmerman. What do you think of Long tonight, Herc?
Oh, man.
Well, that doesn't sound good.
And I don't even know if I should be putting this on Aaron Long because it's Greg Berhalter putting him in this position. Aaron Long and Walker Zimmerman aren't asked to do these things at the level and at the frequency that Greg Berhalter is asking these center backs to play out of the back. And they're making mistakes for it. The center backs put the midfield and the U.S. men's national team in constant pressure today. It's a stock down for Aaron Long because you've got other guys like Chris Richards. You've got other guys like Mark McKenzie who... maybe one or two plays where he could have done better was a decent option off the bench. But when you've got such clatter outside of the picture for guys like John Brooks, for guys like...
Number one John Brooks supporter here on Football Manager.
Guys even like Tim Ream. You've got a large sector of the fan base and pundits screaming for Tim Ream that are actual passing backs. It forces you to think of what could happen. Even the Cameron Carter-Vickers, who was...
I feel like the guys that didn't play today saw their stock go up. Because even Walker Zimmerman, like, I don't feel was great. On Long, though, there was a couple times the goal scorer, Kamada, literally started on one side of him and then was goal side.
Getting in constantly behind him.
Yes.
And he's a physical presence as a center back, and he's by no means slow, but he was slow to react today.
Yeah. I feel like this is where you're seeing right now the importance of the Chris Richards injury. Missing him in this camp, this would have been the moment for Chris Richards,
absolutely,
fresh off the Premier League move, to grab that spot next to Walker Zimmerman. He's going to miss the opportunities. And now it almost, as it has for a while, almost feels like Aaron Long by default.
It does feel by default. Right. Because Walker Zimmerman, in a way, was probably Miles Robinson, but that's not going to be a possibility. He was probably your best center back throughout the World Cup qualifying process. So he's a lock. I think the majority of fans and pundits would say that Walker Zimmerman is the lock right now at the center back position. It's who accompanies him. And Aaron Long had an opportunity missed today. And I don't necessarily know if that's his fault, asking him to play a way that he's not accustomed to week in, week out.
How important is that? I mean, is it really something that's that difficult to do? These guys can play long balls, right?
That's not what Greg Berhalter's asking him to do. Greg Berhalter is asking these guys to play cleanly out of the back. And you saw the forced turnovers today from the Japanese national team. And I'll say forced in quotations. I mean, they put the U.S. men's national team center backs in a little bit of pressure. And if I'm an opposing coach or an opposing player, I'm saying, listen, I would rather Walker Zimmerman or Aaron Long have the ball and handle the ball than I would a Sergiño Dest. Sergiño Dest is a terrible defender. But with the ball at his
feet. Terrible?
Foot,
that's harsh. You said terrible? You said terrible.
He's a terrible defender. With the ball at his feet, he's a very good passing back. He's a very dangerous passing back. There are times when the speed of play, speed of thought for Sergiño Dest going forward is so fast, it takes time for other players to catch up. But defensively, that's where it's slow.
It's easy here to pick on Aaron Long. I think a lot of the moments where the central defensive pairing looked weakest were actually off turnovers from other parts of the field. So it doesn't always trickle down to the center backs, even though they're the ones that usually have to end up cleaning it up. Let's look elsewhere on the back line right now. Sam Bynes, I think for a lot of people was kind of a surprise name on this list. He gets the start at a very important position with Anthony Robinson out. So, did his stock go up or down?
It went down. I mean, there was a...
I feel like that's just the vibe of his game,
right?
No.
Let me tell you this. During the broadcast, John Champion mentioned Sam Bynes, and I was like, Sam Bynes is in the game.
Yes,
he's on the
yes.
field. I forgot that he was in the field, on the field. And when you're a player, a bubble player, trying to get on that plane, you can't go unnoticed.
Yeah.
You cannot go unnoticed in one of the two last opportunities that the U.S. men's national team has to showcase or that you have to show your abilities before the World Cup, Seb. You cannot go unnoticed. Good or bad, he went unnoticed in that first half. And then in the second half, he went noticed for not so good reasons.
Right.
This is a stock down.
So the entire first half, here's the play, it was in the 44th minute. So we literally had to wait almost until the end of the first half to see Sam Bynes get into the attack. Is that really something we can put on Bynes, or is that just more the nature of this game, that your left back, when you're pinned back, is not going to get involved? Obviously, he needed a great performance, and obviously, when we see what Anthony Robinson brings to the position, it's a guy who's comfortable getting smooth left-footed balls. We got none of that from Bynes.
I oftentimes leave myself asking if Greg Berhalter is asking too much of his players in this system. And what I mean by that is there was a time in that broadcast when Taylor Twellman mentioned that Sam Bynes is now operating as a left winger.
Yes, in the second half.
So the intricacy, how complicated he makes it for certain players who may not be used to it or may be above their understanding can hinder this U.S. men's national, can hinder the team at certain times. And Bynes looked lost at certain times today.
Yep. So Sam Bynes, stock down then, kind of stock up for Joe Skelly. Let's see if he gets some action in the next game.
Also way stock up for Anthony Robinson.
For the depth chart spot behind Anthony Robinson at left back. All right, next up on stock up, stock down, it's Matt Turner. But before we discuss him, let's hear from him. He spoke with ESPN after the match.
Matt, how would you describe how the game went today?
Obviously, really disappointing. It was a really competitive game for a friendly match, and I just kind of wish that we had a little more bite about us from the start. I think we hurt ourselves in a lot of ways, but I think we made some like big improvements in the second half. But then at the end, the fact that they were a bit more competitive than us on the 50-50 balls, the restarts, most of that stuff. So I think they probably deserve to win this one.
You know, a lot of attention has been paid to the central defense and, you know, the cohesiveness within that group. What did you see from the back line today?
Yeah, I think obviously some moments all over the field that we wish we had back. I think we're trying things and, you know, implementing, and we have to show that we can make mistakes and continue forward. I think that second goal comes from a lot of frustration of things just not really working for us for the day. We give the ball away and we kind of all just drop our heads and we don't react. And they were having joy on the ball and running freely at us. And I think that second goal really summed up pretty much the whole match.
With less than 2 months till the World Cup, what are you hoping to accomplish personally between now and the first match in Doha?
One day at a time. Stay healthy. Anytime I have the opportunity to play a game, you know, play well, play consistently, and show people like the growth that I've had in my game, because I think I've come a long way in the 2-3 months that I've been at Arsenal, which has been great. So overall, I just want to show that I'm out there to compete. I'm really, really proud and grateful for every opportunity that I have to represent this country, and I think that's really my message.
There he is, Matt Turner. So did his stock go up, or did it go down after that performance against Japan, Herc?
Stock is up.
Easiest answer there was.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, the only...
And, like, way up.
Way up. You know what it is, Seb?
Yeah.
he's the perfect goalkeeper if you know you're going to be under constant pressure, because he's such a great shot stopper. He's shaky
so
with his feet,
you're, so you don't want to play out of the back. So what you're saying is he's actually the best shot stopper in the group. You're saying
absolutely.
He's better at that.
I don't think that's a debate.
Really?
Absolutely. Zach Steffen offers you different things. Like, if you think you're going to have the lion's share of possession and you can play out of the back,
right,
that's when Zach Steffen comes into play. But if you think you're going to be under constant pressure, do not put anybody on the field other than Matt Turner.
Hmm.
Matt Turner is going to be your guy. When he's the best player on the field for the U.S. men's national team, that tells you a little bit about your day. That tells Greg Berhalter how little he had in possession, how little he had going forward, and how under constant pressure,
yeah,
he and that back line were.
And that goal, too, let's remember it, looked half offside. I mean,
It did look, it was ruled offside. There were some other saves that were worldly.
Well, and I love the first save of the game, just a couple minutes in after that first chance for the U.S., Japan gets a chance. That's the moment, right? That's when you really need your goalie to come up big, and he came up big there to keep him in it. Also at 1-0, another big save to keep it at 1-0.
Huge save. Yeah. I would say there were two saves before that 1-0 that he was massive in. And look, there was the opening sequence when Sergiño Dest played the ball back to him, and he kicked it like maybe 15 yards deep and about 100 yards high. And you're like, okay, you expect that out of Matt Turner. His strengths aren't his feet. But what you expect out of Matt Turner is exactly what he did, that shot-stopping ability. He's the best in the pool when it comes to that shot-stopping ability. So if you think the U.S. men's national team will be under constant pressure, that's your goalkeeper.
See, I think tonight we saw a lot of rust from guys, a lot of whom are actually playing every week for their team. One guy who isn't is Matt Turner, and he didn't look rusty, I don't think, at all. And one of the things that I saw recently from him was he's come out and he's talked about his time at Arsenal, and he says he's massively improved. And I got to be honest, when I saw that, I kind of rolled my eyes. I was like, you've played a game. You've played a couple matches. How could you have massively improved? He definitely seems confident. He doesn't seem like he's missing playing every week. He seems like he's the best goalie in the pool right now, basically off that performance alone.
Oof. It's tough to judge.
You got to say right now, you have to say right now, he's the leader in the clubhouse.
Oh, no, absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, Seb. But as far as improving.
Yeah. And I'm not just saying that
because he's shown me what he's always shown me.
Right, but I'm not just saying that because Steffen is injured, and we can always put that asterisk to Steffen that, he could be hurt.
But
I'm
you also need to say that because Steffen is injured.
Yeah, but I'm also saying that because Zach Steffen isn't playing. Like, even when, he lost his job. So
Zach Steffen's played more than Matt Turner, but Matt Turner makes you feel more secure.
Yes, and the guys pointed out on the broadcast, the Arsenal schedule is actually favorable in a lot of ways.
It is, because they'll play a game a week, and he'll get a game a week. And right now, I can't tell you that Zach Steffen will be available for a game a week.
Yep. It feels like Steffen has room to gain on Turner, and you don't know if there's going to be space for him to gain that room, but we also know that he's a Berhalter favorite. And that might help close the gap.
Because it was Matt Turner who came on the show and pointed out, and we didn't realize until he pointed out, like, hey, every single important game, Greg Berhalter has gone with Zach Steffen. Costa Rica, Mexico, like those important games, he's gone with Zach Steffen. So if that's the case, what's more important than heading to the World Cup? If Zach Steffen's healthy, you almost assume Greg Berhalter will go with Zach Steffen.
We focus so much on the nine. I think this is the biggest decision that Greg Berhalter has. Because when you make this decision, you can't swap it. Like, you can swap your nines throughout the World Cup. I don't think once you make this choice, you can swap it and it'll end well. It'll end badly.
Let's be realistic. What's more probable? A goalkeeper having to come up big or Jesus Ferreira having to score a goal in the World Cup?
Yeah. I mean, depending on who you play, but yes, I think
well, just
goalie,
in this group.
Yeah, your goalie is going to be the most important player for the U.S. All right, one more stock up, stock down here. Let's go to the midfield, huh? Now we know Tyler Adams is going to start. We know Weston McKennie is going to start. There's another spot in there that most people think is for Yunus Musah. Yunus Musah hurt, so Luca Della Torre gets those minutes tonight. What do you think of his performance? Is his stock on the rise or on the fall?
Stuck down. And
ooh, this one hurts you because you said Luca Della Torre was 99.99999% sure to start a game.
And he still may. But the reality is, what I love most about Luca Della Torre is his straight up just arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
He's an arrogant kid.
Cocky player.
Cocky on the ball.
Yeah.
He knows he can glide by you. He knows he can pass the ball through you. I didn't see that today.
Yeah.
He was getting bodied, getting bullied by a Japanese midfield. I mean, credit to Japan. They look like a team.
Yeah.
But Luca Della Torre being a guy who thinks he's going to be an integral part of this team come Qatar, this is where you got to show it. We're less than 60 days away from the World Cup. If you ever had an opportunity to say, like, hey, I want to be the man in this midfield, I want to be part of this midfield with Weston McKennie, with Tyler Adams, who are locks, no Yunus Musah because he's banged up, it's now. And he's not played in La Liga with Celta de Vigo.
That's what's interesting to me.
And he had a bad showing tonight versus Japan.
Because you said when he made the move to Celta that you weren't crazy about it. You didn't know that it was going to be the best situation for him ahead of a World Cup. He's not playing there. And I think what we saw today, because I'm with you on Luca Della Torre, he's that guy in midfield who makes it look easy, who does it quicker than everybody else. We saw a guy who was slow on the ball. I saw him get caught on the ball multiple times, like dribbling into pressure. That's not something you usually see from Della Torre. I have to think of the guys who are suffering from rust because of their club situation. Luca Della Torre might be at the top of that list, and I think you were right. I think the Celta move may long-term work out for him because you don't want to be in the second division in Holland compared to La Liga. But it doesn't feel like right now, especially for the World Cup, that it was the move, the adequate.
Sorry, I blanked that after you said I was right.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't happen very often.
I love Luca's arrogance.
That I admit it.
And when a player who's arrogant starts doubting himself, it's over.
Yeah.
He can't doubt himself. He's a special player. He needs to prove it. He needs to believe that. He needs to think it every time he's on the field.
So Luca Della Torre then gets the start against Japan, but his stock goes down after the performance in a 2-0 defeat for the United States. The international window continues up next for the United States, Saudi Arabia on Tuesday. We got MLS coming your way on October 2nd. Portland against LAFC. Herc, you might be calling this one, I feel like. It's ABC, ESPN Deportes, and streaming live on the ESPN app. More MLS coming to your television soon.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Pulisic was prepared to come out and say these things, even with Tuchel in charge at Chelsea.
Why do you need to write a book?
I don't know why he's putting out a book. He wants to copy me, I guess. It's why he wants to put a book out. But.
And it's actually Tuchel's fault. You don't go telling players one thing, and then when it comes to it, you do something else.
But just go back to my original question.
Uh-huh.
Why?
Oh, my days. Managers change their mind. All right, when it happens to you, you're a little bit gutted, you're a little bit upset, but it all just sounds a little bit babyish to me. I mean,
this whinge would carry more weight if, you know, Chelsea had lost.
Right.
You get Thomas Tuchel sitting there and he's off his feet up, big cigar. You bash the door in, storm in there, and he's getting all barrels and he'll just go. And we won.
Yeah.
Well, I would have been his teammate. I would have come to him and I say, well, why are you whining about?
You are somehow focused on writing this book now.
Oh, it's very dramatic, Gab.
What does he gain from it?
ESPN FC has had plenty to say on the explosive excerpts from Christian Pulisic's upcoming book. In case you missed them, here's the comments about the second leg of last year's Champions League semifinal against Real Madrid. Of course, we remember Pulisic scored Chelsea's lone goal in the first leg. Quote, "What happened before that game was hugely disappointing for me. I had a really good first leg performance, and our following match was against Fulham in the league. Tuchel told me that he was resting me for the second leg, and as a result, I didn't play a single minute in the Fulham game. Then, on match day of the second semi, Tuchel tells me he's changed his mind and he's going with Kai Havertz. I honestly was dumbfounded and very disappointed. Herc, are you cool with Pulisic's public criticism of his now former manager at Chelsea?
Yeah, I'm cool with it. Let me just...
Really?
Yeah, I'll tell you why. Okay, let me just get a few things off.
Off my chest.
Dan Thomas hates Christian Pulisic. Hates Christian Pulisic. Dan Thomas of ESPN FC.
I think Dan Thomas hates all the Christian Pulisic fans in the YouTube comments, because I know he reads
them. And why would he do this?
Yes. I also mentioned Dan Thomas hosts ESPN FC, which has talked about Christian Pulisic's book excerpts. Not the last day, not the last 2 days, the last 3 days.
Why would he do this?
Love you, Dan.
Because, as you can see on ESPN FC, mm-hmm. they've spoken about Christian Pulisic in this book for the last 3 days. It sells. Christian Pulisic sells. Good or bad, he's polemic. He sells. So why would he write a book? Because it would sell.
Okay, let me stop you right there.
Can I just really quickly say my...
Christian Pulisic doesn't need the money.
Hold on. Like the great American poet Marshawn Lynch said, make your money, take care of y'all chicken. Okay, I hope he does that. Now, go ahead.
Why not wait? Like, if you're Christian Pulisic, yes, it sells. Obviously, you always want to grow your brand. Do you need a book right now? Do you need a book that's commenting on your manager? Who, by the way, if we assume... I mean, obviously, this book didn't appear in the last 2 days. This was going to be published with Thomas Tuchel potentially as manager.
Good point.
Was Christian Pulisic really, like, willing to...
I thought about that.
If Tuchel's a manager, this is a... You think this is three days on FC?
He's done. 7 days.
Do you think if Tuchel's a manager, it's still in the book? That's what I wonder.
Of course it's still in the book. You don't... I mean, you have to assume this was cleared months ago.
Right.
So he would have thought that Christian Pulisic... that Thomas Tuchel would still be his manager. That tells me how upset Christian Pulisic was.
Thomas
Tuchel broke code. Okay? And Steve Nichol alluded to it in the FC segment when he said it's on Thomas Tuchel.
Yeah.
It's also on Christian Pulisic. But Thomas Tuchel broke code first. You don't tell a player and then go back on it. That said, Craig Bradley's absolutely right. He did what he needed to do to win that game. So Christian Pulisic can have zero argument because they won the Champions League final. They won the Champions League. They lifted that trophy. So whatever Thomas Tuchel did, you eat it as a player. Now, does Christian Pulisic have a gripe?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. He was lied to. Absolutely. Do I have a problem with him putting this in the book? No. Because obviously people want, or he feels people want to hear what he has to say, and it will sell. So I've got zero issue here. I've got more of an issue, the reaction to it.
Okay. From?
From British media, from a sector
of pundits. Our buddies over at FC.
That think that Christian Pulisic is so irrelevant. Boy, he's so irrelevant. You've spoken about him for the last 3 days. This is exactly why he writes a book, because people want to hear what he has to say. Now, he's 24 years old. He just turned it on Sunday, I believe, right?
Yep.
The guy started playing with the national team at 16 years old. He's been at this for 8 years. Already won a Champions League. He's about to go to his first World Cup. There are people out there who think he's experienced enough where they're interested in what he has to say. Whether you think he's right or wrong, that's a different story. But don't act surprised that the kid wrote a book.
We're focusing.
He's not the first, and he won't be the last.
No, it is very early, and obviously, I think that plays a lot into why people raise their eyebrows. Right, he's 24 years old. We're focusing a lot on the dumbfounded and the very disappointed. It was clear that he wanted to take shots at Tuchel, though, because he also talked about that first goal in the first leg against Real Madrid. And in the book, in one of the excerpts, he says, Tuchel was literally telling me not to make the run that I made that ends in the goal. That is shots fired.
So I thought to myself, like, how could you hear that? You're on the field. And then I went back and actually watched highlights of that game. It was during the pandemic.
Right.
There was zero crowd in that game. So you could absolutely hear the coaches on the sideline. Now, that doesn't surprise me from Thomas Tuchel, because Thomas Tuchel is an uber defensive coach.
Sure.
Right? Took a chance, it paid off for you, good. But he also talks about the play of the assist on Mason Mount. And that speaks to me of the high IQ of Christian Pulisic in that game. He has to wait for the play to develop for Mason Mount to recognize the run and then get in front of his defender and then put it across for the goal. These are things that me as a pundit, and if you're a U.S. Men's National Team fan, you want to hear, and you are dumbfounded by, like, wow, this kid is actually pretty intelligent in the way he sees the game. Now, where he lacks in that intelligence is that social awareness to know that this may impact him going forward with Thomas Tuchel, because Thomas Tuchel was just let go recently.
Christian Pulisic then getting all the headlines. Wasn't in the game tonight for the United States against Japan, but Tyler Adams was. He's standing by right now with our Alexis Nunez. Alexis.
Yeah, thanks, Sebi. We've got Tyler who's here putting on a brave face, of course. We know it was a frustrating result, Tyler. We heard from Greg, and he said what he wanted was a bit more personality. How do you take that, and what made it difficult to not show up with the personality we usually see you guys with?
Mm-hmm. No, it's definitely a tough one to take. I mean, you come here wanting to treat it like a group stage game of the World Cup in preparation for the World Cup, and we didn't reach our standard today at the end of the day. We faced a talented team, but in the end, it felt like we almost played into their hands. We had a little bit of frustration seep in, and you could just tell the team was off, a little late to tackles, late receiving the ball, finding solutions, being dangerous and creating chances like we normally do. So it's a learning experience at the end of the day, and something that we got to take on the chin for the next game.
And of course, credit to Japan, as you said, a very talented team that took their chances, definitely. Mm-hmm. You guys, of course, had the frustrations. Was there a bit of rust involved, a bit of kind of getting back together, getting the gang back together and flowing? Is there that?
Absolutely. But you have to give credit to Japan. They're such a talented team. I've played against a bunch of those guys in the Bundesliga before, and, you know, they have quality all over the field, and they showed it tonight. So credit to their game plan. It worked, but it didn't feel like we executed our match plan going into the game. And at the end of the day, we can't just start to waver and do our own things and allow individuality to creep into the team. We need to stick together as a team at the end of the day, and we didn't do that.
And then looking at the stats, of course, with the U.S. playing away from home, it doesn't look too pretty, of course. I think it's like about 1 in 10 wins.
Okay.
Now that you're going away, you have a whole tournament away from home. You have these warm-ups away from home. How'd you guys, you know, remedy that? Is that a bit of a concern?
No. I mean, we even felt a little bit of the support today from our fans. So we're not.
They showed up.
Yeah, for sure. And we didn't even really think about that. That's the first time I heard that statistic. But away games are never easy in general. But when you go to a World Cup, everyone's playing away at the end of the day. So we just have to deal with that as it comes. But again, learning experience, we have to build on it.
Yeah, everyone says that you learn a bit more from a loss than you do from
100%.
A win. Saudi Arabia next. You know, of course, everyone would pick the U.S. favorites for this one. How'd you guys regroup, get in the right mental state for that one?
We never want to go into a game thinking that we're the favorites. We've had this underdog mentality for a long time now. Playing Saudi Arabia, we again know they have quality, another World Cup opponent as well. So we have to bring our A game. We need a better performance than what we reached today.
Tyler, thanks so much. See you Tuesday.
Yeah, see you Tuesday.
Back to you guys.
Yeah. All right, thank you very much, Alexis. Thanks to Tyler Adams as well out there in Dusseldorf after the U.S. Loses 2-0 to Japan. Some interesting comments there from Tyler. He said they didn't reach our standard. He also talked about the underdog mentality. What'd you make of it?
He also mentioned that they wanted
to say this. I love Tyler Adams. I love, that kid from the time he was 16 talked like a captain, and every time he just says exactly what you want to hear.
Told me to F off when he was 16, and I was... on the field.
Who hasn't done that? Yes,
on the field. But that's when I knew it was special.
Well, how special am I then? If that's all it takes.
They wanted to treat this like a group.
Yeah, World Cup group phase.
Phase game. That's the performance you put out. The mentality was to treat this like a group phase game.
I'm seeing your 1 to 10 start at a 6. I'm seeing it grow throughout the show.
Well, because the player's missing. But Tyler Adams won't be missing.
Right.
And for Tyler Adams, and I know his blood is boiling, and that's what I love about him.
Yeah.
To hear his coach say they were lacking personality, I feel like Tyler Adams in his head thinks he's the true captain of this team, the true leader of this team, and he is boiling by the remarks because in his head, Tyler Adams doesn't think he got these men ready. He got these players ready.
You think he thinks it's on him as a leader?
Absolutely. I remember the old Max and Herc podcast.
Yes, yep.
We interviewed him in a media day. I interviewed him by myself, and we had a discussion. And it was 2017 Open Cup final, I believe, New York Red Bulls versus Kansas City in Kansas City. And I'm calling the game for Deportes, and here's this Tyler Adams kid who's 16 years old, and he's literally telling his teammates to pick it up.
Yep.
Literally telling his teammates, you need to be better. Like, in their face, while they're down. And I asked him about it, and he's like, it's my responsibility, regardless of age, to get these guys ready, to know they're up for the moment. Because they can't let themselves down. And I remember thinking to myself, like, what is this kid on? But I love that mentality. So I know he'll feel slighted by it.
Speaking of mentality, he used the word underdog mentality. The U.S. never sees themselves as a favorite. Is that necessarily a good thing? Aren't there some games you want to say, no, we are the favorite. We need, the onus is on us. Like, we're
Why?
The team.
What have you done to prove you're the favorite? Did you go to the last World Cup?
Well, but that's 4 years ago. You have to look at the matchups today where they are today.
Did you win the World Cup cycle?
You have to.
How many games have you won away
from home? So you think the U.S. will just play reactive soccer the entire World Cup, just sit back and relax, not going to try to be the favorite, the protagonist? I mean, at some point, the U.S. will need to.
Against England?
Against Wales? I mean, Wales plays very defensive. If Wales and the U.S. both sit back, it's going to be a really boring game.
There are games, right? There are games.
I mean, you can't go at Iran? You don't think that's...
Well, I mean, you're going to have to. Iran.
I'm not underestimating,
but... I would say the team you can probably dictate more.
You have to win.
Pace.
You have to score and win to get out of the group phase.
you
can't just play 0-0.
I'm not saying play 0-0, Seb, but this arrogance is very American, the American arrogance of... But I will go back to what have you done to prove that you can play this way? I mean, Japan just played you off the field in a neutral site, just bullied and bodied you all up and down the field. And now you're going to go into a game versus Wales and think that you're going to dictate the game, the play. Manage expectations. Be better so you don't have to be in a situation where you're chasing the game, but by no means come in with this arrogance because you're American. You need to be at a world level.
You know one thing we haven't talked enough about in this match? We got to see the kids for the first time. The new World Cup kids on the field for the first time. It was pretty exciting. Our Football America's cameras were actually at the kit launch event last week. Let's check out what they saw.
As a former player, you always look forward to the World Cup. That's where your sport is on the world stage. And for all the games that I played in with our national team, I will never forget the World Cup games.
So I think that the whole collection is amazing. It's a lot of work over the last 2 years, but I think the results speak for themselves.
The design process started back in January of 2020. So I had the opportunity to spend time with the men's team and the women's team and just validate the work and make sure that we're going down the right direction and probably redirecting a little bit based on their feedback.
I can see myself, especially in that state sweatshirt when it's a little colder, not necessarily in Qatar, but when it's a little bit colder for sure. Yes. You know, it does have shades of that with the striping around the shoulders, doesn't it? You know, I know there's been some criticism, right, particularly from the player pool, but I don't think they've got the full context. And what I mean by that is I don't know if it was shown with the whole collection, first of all, and then second of all, if they saw the whole kit, you know, in isolation, the whole white kit, the whole blue kit, because when I saw it here live, it's a good kit. And anytime you're putting on the U.S. men's national team jersey at a World Cup, it's special. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what the kit looks like. It matters what it represents.
So there you have it. Full reaction after we got to see the U.S. jerseys for the first time. Now on a field, then in person at the big event in New York. All right, so do they look any better on TV?
Shiny digs don't make players.
Bro.
You'd be happy to play in a T-shirt. That said, if you're a fan.
Yes.
Woo.
Look at that. Look at that on Serginho Dest. The crest just looks so awkward there in the middle. Man. Speaking of awkward, you know what really is awkward? Have you seen the women's jerseys?
Mm-mm.
So they have the crest in the middle, and then the incredibly important, the most important thing you can possibly have, the World Cup winner's badge, kind of like wedged on the side. It's like they forgot about the women. There were so many oversights in this.
But they got the stars.
They got the stars. they got four of them. But okay, so now that we've seen it live, we're gonna give it a stock up to a drippin'. Are we keeping it at trippin'? Dripping. Well, we haven't seen the Blues yet. Maybe we'll see the Blues against Saudi Arabia.
That'll be better.
You said you love the Blues, right?
No, I didn't say I love the Blues.
You like them slightly more than the...
Japan's kits, by the way. Those are nice. Have you seen Saudi Arabia's kits? Those are nice.
Okay, I'm pumped to see them. I'm pumped to see them on Tuesday when the United States faces off against Saudi Arabia. Let's talk more kits. This time, Canada. And this is kind of a sad story for our friends up north. They're not getting new kits for the World Cup because according to Nike, they're on a, quote, different kit development cycle. What do you think about that?
We didn't expect you to make the World Cup response from your good friends at Nike. Oh, man, come on. I will say, I do love the black.
Yes,
all black.
Strong look,
I don't know if they'll use it at the World Cup, but I do love the all black kits. Other than that, my Canadian friends. Whoa, Canada.
That's right. Back in the World Cup for the first time since 1986, and they can't even get new kits.
Y ahí viene Sepúlveda. Memo, corner.
And there's McKinney. Sticking the palms of Memo Ochoa.
Va a ir cerrado, por eso están todos ahí. Le pegan a tajadón del arquero. Memo Ochoa.
Qué tapadón de Memo.
Thrilled to be joined now on Football Americas by Guillermo Memo Ochoa. You know him, of course, as a goalie for the Mexican national team, for Club America, but also he's a part of Team Expedia. I understand you're an ambassador for travel to Mexico City. So quickly give us what a day in Mexico City would be like if we were going off your tour itinerary.
Well, if you want to spend a good day in Mexico, you have to spend the day with me. Of course, when I have a work, I don't have a lot of time to go out. But when I have the free time, I try to spend with my family. When I was young, and I was in the school, I used to go in Coyoacán. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in Coyoacán, and most of my time I spent in the center of Coyoacán. When I was in the school and when I was in the class, no? So for me is the heart of Mexico because you have a lot of things to do there. No, you have all the markets with a lot of different foods, a lot of different kind of meals to eat. You have the churros.
I was gonna say I saw that on your Instagram. Course, we saw the churros.
I just gotta know where I get the tacos. Tacos al pastor.
Tacos.
Also.
Yeah. Where's the spot to go for lunch in Coyoacán?
For lunch, in this, I don't know how to say that, but this, you have like two or three big markets mm-hmm. inside Coyoacán. So inside the market you can find tacos if you want, but also quesadillas. With cheese. Sometimes if you ask for one quesadilla, they give you without cheese.
It's a tortilla.
The tortilla is like a taco. You have a birria, you have a pozole, enchiladas. You can find all the Mexican foods there. So, but churros also. And you can put inside the churro whatever you want. No? But,
chocolate, caramel,
everything. Perfect. So
I'm hungry,
it's a nice
bro.
Place.
You ready to go?
My kids love to go there and spend the day there because you have music when you're walking over the plaza. You have music. You have the balloons, you know, to buy everything. So it's you have a lot of color there.
All right, let's talk some soccer.
Yeah, let's go.
Right? This isn't your first World Cup coming up. You've been around this team for a long time. How would you describe the vibe, the feeling around the team as you guys get ready for the World Cup?
Well, with the people or the press?
Let's say both. Let's start with the people.
With the people is different because I feel everyone is positive. No, when you find or when you talk with the people outside the pitch or the stadium and they ask you for a photo or autograph, they always being positive, hey, come on, you're going to do a good World Cup, we already have the tickets for Qatar, we already buy everything, all my family is going to be there in Qatar. So all it's positive, but you have the other side, no, the dark side.
So by dark side, do you mean press?
Sometimes.
What's that like?
Oh well, I don't try to see a lot of programs to see the TV because for one athlete it's not so good that sometimes if you are always in front of the TV. But of course, you hear something sometimes, you read something sometimes, and always they try to have something to speak about, mm-hmm. and always the negative have more
clicks, more
clicks.
Yeah, clicks.
Yeah, of course.
Memo, speaking on that pessimistic nature of the media, Tata Martino went out to say he feels like public enemy number one. Going off that pessimistic nature, maybe in the press and in the fan base, what'd you make of those comments?
Well, if he said that, it's because he feel that, no? And it's normal because he's not used to live in Mexico. He don't know the reality of the country, of the Mexican press. So you have to think about this. No, I think for him it's a big surprise because you make a good qualification, not the best, but a good qualification games. You make the first 2 years very good 2 years. After that, not so bad in the results. Maybe sometimes in the game, in the performance, it wasn't the best. But you lose the final of National League, final. You lose the final of Gold Cup, final. Yeah. Because you have to be there in the final. You lose the final, so yeah. you can win or lose. It's an sport, so. And you lose in the qualification 2 games. So sometimes, if you look this from the outside, from another national teams, if you give them the same results, they will say, oh, it's okay. No, yeah. If we make this kind of points at the end, it's good enough for Canada, for the USA, for Costa Rica, for Canada, but sometimes not for Mexico. But that is the outside of the Mexico national team, not in the inside,
right.
No?
Within the team.
Yeah, inside the team, from the dwarf to inside to us, we are okay because we know this situation. So we already hear that a lot of times, no? Me, like others with more experience, it's not the first time that we hear that. So we need to try to calm to the group. We need to talk with the group so everybody understand everything and understand this. Of course, we have to improve our performance all the time, and we are going to try to do this until the first game.
You mentioned a couple of those games were against the United States. Let's talk a little bit about that rivalry. Of course, there was the big moment with you and Christian Pulisic. You talked about El Espejo, then he had the man in the mirror. Yeah. I saw you guys also hook up when Club America and Chelsea played. There was a moment there. Mm-hmm. Do you regret all those comments, and do you think the nature of the rivalry has maybe changed from before you said that now?
No. I don't regret that because it wasn't personal. No, it's just part of the game. I don't have nothing against the U.S. team or against some player. It's just part of the game. It's part of the history. It's part of this rivalry, and that's it. No, this have to stay in the pitch. I saw him after the game. I saw him 2 months, 3 months later in one friendly game in Las Vegas, and we speak about that. No. And we say nothing happened here, no. So it's okay. It's part of the game. It's part of this industry. So it's normal, no. Because for you was okay, for the fans it was the same.
Yeah, you know, it was great for our industry.
It was. You know, it's funny, but every 4 years we get the best of Memo Ochoa, and it happens to be in the World Cup. Mm. It was in Brazil where you shut out Neymar and Luka Modric. And now you're going to have a chance to go up against Messi and Lewandowski. Mm. Yeah. I mean, you save your best moments for the World Cup. What can you expect going against Messi and Lewandowski?
I expect to have a greater result, not only me. No, of course, I have to do a great job. We need a great performance of every player because, of course, we talk about Robert, no, Lewandowski, but it's not only him. No, behind him, you can find a lot of good players, a lot of elite players. So this is going to be a tough game. Also, you have to play against Messi, but it's not only Messi, you know, because they have a lot of good players, Argentina. But I think in one World Cup, you want to play against the best, of the best of the history, the best of the best in the world. And for me, the group is a tough group, but it's the same in the other World Cup we play against. I remember in Russia, against Korea, against Germany, the first game, Switzerland, the third game. was a tough group in Brazil also, no, against Croatia, Cameroon, yeah, and Brazil. So it's never easy, no, it's never easy. And but I think we are ready for this challenge.
All right, great to talk to Memo Ochoa ahead of Mexico's upcoming friendly. So we take a look at his stats. I feel like Christian Pulisic might be working in production. Why is that thing at the bottom there pointed out? Saved 0 of 16 penalties on target.
That's unnecessary from our producer.
In Liga MX since 2019. The anti-Memo agenda alive and well here on Football America. It's time now to welcome in Mauricio Pedrosa. Of course, you know him as Herc's co-host on Ahora o Nunca. They actually spoke to Memo Ochoa in Spanish as well. Good thing we got to speak to Memo, because pretty much like everybody else on the team is hurt, right?
Oh, yeah, pretty much. I mean, speaking of players being available, he's always available. The rest of them, not so much. It's always a pleasure to be with you, especially after El Baile.
Ooh, El Baile, look at that.
El Baile, the Japón to the U.S. Men's National.
Yeah, it was a pretty great, contundente great victoria from Japan. Who do you think has a worse injury stack up right now, U.S. or Mexico?
Mexico, of the options behind said injured players for Mexico.
Okay. All right, so we got two big games coming up for Mexico. Last chances for Tata Martino to make some big decisions. We're always focusing, though, on the opener against Poland at the World Cup. So as we think about these two games, let's lock in on some key position battles we'll be watching for. But before we get to that, we need to know, Mal, who's already a lock to be in the 11 against Poland. So give us your lineup locks.
Break out the sticker book.
So this might not be as easy as it sounds,
okay,
right? But yes, let's start with those who we believe are already locked to start against Poland in a little bit like 2 months. So we'll start with our good guy, Memo Ochoa. Okay. It was great to talk to him, right?
No debate.
So no debate.
With Football America's, you're number one on the list.
Of course, of course. And then I think both left back and right back are already set.
Okay.
One of them is injured, though. Jorge Sanchez is not going to play the friendly matches, but his injury is not really concerning.
Won't affect him for Poland.
So Jorge Sanchez starting as a right fullback, and then of the left hand side, Gerardo Arteaga.
Okay.
Right,
okay.
We're all clear on that, right?
I think we're okay with that, unless Tata Martino, who you guys know really well, truly loves Jesús Gallardo.
Aye, he's the only one that loves Jesús Gallardo.
He's the only one who loves Jesús Gallardo. But I don't think at this point that he's starting over a guy who's playing in Europe and honestly has been very, very consistent when he plays for the Mexican national team.
Okay.
All right, moving on. I'm going to go with, I call it numero cinco, you guys call it number six, right?
Defensive midfielder.
That's Edson. Do not call him Tlanepantla's Beckenbauer.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't like it.
But he doesn't like it. I asked him, and he doesn't like
that's
that nickname. I won't call him again that. And let's not forget this. He's probably the player in best form right now for the Mexican.
Yeah. Not named Memo Ochoa, yeah.
Not named Memo Ochoa.
Agreed.
Exactly.
Agreed.
So he's in great form. And then if he's fit, if he's 100%, and close to 100%, 80%, I think Hector Herrera is starting no matter what, right?
For Tata Martino, that's a lock. I agree.
That is a lock. All right. And then we have to move up.
Give me that front forward line. Give me that tridente.
I think there's only one player that has his place locked here in the starting 11. And we all know who that is. That's honestly the only player who's fit 100%, close to 100%, and that's Irving El Chucky Lozano.
Dale.
Right? And that's it. I think those are definitely going to start against Poland. So we have five spots that are truly question marks for the Mexican national team. That's a lot. That's a big number.
It is. And even that lock, Irving Lozano, which I agree with you, has only played 51% of the games in Serie A, one assist, and in World Cup qualifying, one goal against Honduras.
And remember, I had a chance to talk to him on Tuesday during the Mexican national team media day here in LA. And he gave me the impression that he's concerned for his health in the long term.
Right.
He had another concussion, and he had to miss two games. This is his third concussion in the last 2 years. Ooh. For a player like that, it's not easy.
No.
So these are my locks for the starter for the opening game against the Poland.
Okay, so you think that we've got, six of the 11 sorted. That means we got five position battles that we need to keep an eye on for these upcoming games against Peru and Colombia. Let's start in the center of defense, because this, Herc, is a position that you and I have been talking about for a long time. It still seems unsettled. Yeah. That position is not sorted yet for Tata Martino.
It's
we only
not.
Have 2 months left.
And again, this is what I want to see, right?
Yes.
Not what I believe Tata's going to do.
Right.
I want the center backs to be Néstor Araujo and Johan Vázquez.
Wow.
Néstor Araujo, 30 years old. Remember, he lost. He wasn't able to play the World Cup in Russia because of injury as well. But I think this is his time. He made the tough decision of leaving Europe, leaving Celta de Vigo, to come back and play again in the Mexican League for Club America. And once he was healthy, he plays 90 minutes, and he plays center back, starter center back, for the best team in the Mexican League.
Yeah, this is pretty consistent with what Tata Martino has shown us as far as Néstor Araujo, because he's played a lot of the games for Tata Martino. So this is consistent, at least Néstor Araujo for Tata Martino.
I'm surprised you went with Johan Vázquez and just thinking about a guy like Cesar Montes, who we've talked about a lot.
Can I be honest? This really surprises me.
Really?
When you take consideration his level of play right now in Tata Martino, he's played 4 out of 7 games in Serie A, only 39% of the minutes. Mm. He played 4 games in World Cup qualifying. Mexico only won 1, and that was against the worst team in World Cup qualifying, Honduras.
And he admitted on Tuesday that took a toll on his mental health. He was depressed after those games against the U.S. men's national team and Canada, because he was the one who was starting those games that was not a regular starter for Tata Martino, and he felt like it was his fault that Mexico didn't perform well.
Tough games.
Now, if we go to the depth chart, right, Néstor Araujo would be taking Cesar Montes' place.
Yep.
Johan Vázquez, I think he's competing against Héctor Moreno. Héctor Moreno is 34 years old, and he has only started the last 2 of the last 7 games for Rayados de Monterrey.
Yeah.
So that's a tough decision for Tata Martino.
And you're saying it because of the profile, 2 left-footed players.
All right, so moving on to the midfield, right? We know Edson starting, Héctor Herrera starting. Who's playing on the left-hand side of Edson Gutierrez? I think this is the best option, and it's not Andrés Guardado. It is Eric Gutierrez. First of all, Andrés Guardado is 35, right? He's coming off an injury as well. And Eric Gutierrez is a regular starter for Ruud van Nistelrooy at PSV. He's a regular. I did not say he started every game.
Yes.
He's a regular starter. And you know,
fourth
I
game the other
100%
weekend, he didn't
correct
start. But he got in
with
the
that assessment. Yes. So, and that's the big question, right? Is Andrés Guardado, who's the captain of the team, is he going to start, or is it going to be Eric Gutierrez? Eric said he doesn't believe he's going to start because of Guardado's experience, his level of the captain, right? But I believe he gives Tata Martino the best option of a really solid, good box-to-box player.
Andrés Guardado is the captain of the team. Mm. He's played 177 games for the Mexican national team. But what is surprising is in World Cup qualifying, he only played, or started, I should say, 4 games for Tata Martino out of the 14.
This is a very specific Poland pick for you with Gutierrez, right?
Oh, yeah,
this is a 100%. Matchup thing because he gives you something that Guardado and maybe nobody else in that pool does.
Yes, number one. And remember the way Poland plays. They have a line of 5 midfielders. So that's going to be a really, really, really tough matchup for the Mexican national team, the way they play with only 3. You're going to have your wingers coming back, having a different position on the field and supporting the midfield. I believe Eric Gutierrez gives you the best chance over Andrés Guardado.
All right, let's go up top. Let's talk about the big guns now.
So
Who's
going to play opposite to Irving Lozano?
Yes.
We know Tecatito Corona won't be able to play. Tata Martino's still hoping for a miracle. You're going to like
this one. Well, now he said it might not be a miracle.
That's you're right. You are going to love this one.
Yes, give me some Dieguito.
Diego Lainez.
Wow.
Diego Lainez, because he's a natural fit, right? He's probably competing against Alexis Vega to be the starter against Poland. But Alexis Vega is usually a starter from the left-hand side. I know you can move Chucky Lozano to the right-hand side as he does for Napoli. That's actually his position. But I think this is Diego Lainez's time, right? If he's one of the best talents in Mexican soccer, give him the chance to start, see what he's got, and I think whenever he's played for the national team, he's performed really well.
If he gets to play under World Cup qualifying in Tata Martino has been very consistent. He's played 3 games, 36 minutes, 23 minutes, 24 minutes. He's not played a lot for Tata Martino.
During qualifiers.
What?
Right.
What's gotten you to the World Cup?
But if you go to Gold Cup, all the games, he was a regular, and he looked good, right?
Consistent option off the bench. I want to see if Tata's willing to start him. I think that'll be the big decision. I like why you pick him there, too, because for me, he's the closest to Tecatito.
Yeah, exactly.
Alexis is different. Orbelin, if you were to put him in that conversation, different. He's like Tecatito. He can break
teams
really
down. It really is a three-man race, right? It's Diego Lainez, Alexis Vega, and it's Orbelin Pineda for that spot.
And don't forget Uriel Antuna.
Ooh.
Uriel Antuna will likely...
As a starter?
Uriel Antuna will start against Peru on Saturday, playing that position.
He'll get his chance.
He'll get his chance. I don't like it. I think he gives you the better chance.
All right, take me up top.
This is the biggest question. Who will start?
Tata said he's only taken three. He's got four. He's only taken three.
Says that.
But we need to have a starter.
These two friendly matches, Rogelio Funes Mori and Raul Jimenez, not available. So I think the question is, who's going to start against Peru? And that most likely will be Tata Martino will be showing his hand who he believes is the starter against Poland. And I believe it will be Club America's Henry Martin. 10 goals so far in the Mexican League.
Wow.
4 assists, which speaks of what Tata Martino wants from his number 9. Not only a goal scorer, but someone who's involved in the buildup of play. And he has developed that as of recent with Club America. I love Santiago Jimenez. That's number 1. Number 2, I don't want to get a tattoo of El Bebote.
I love Santiago Jimenez.
That's why I want Henry Martin starting. And guys, I'm very concerned for Raul Jimenez.
Yes, that's really the big question here, because he's not healthy now, but he may not be healthy for Qatar.
He might not be healthy for Qatar.
And even when he is healthy, or if he is healthy, he's not exactly been productive for the Mexican national team.
So there's honestly a big chance that the three strikers, the three number 9 that Tata Martino takes to Qatar are Henry Martin, Santiago Jimenez, and Rogelio Funes Mori.
I'm a huge believer in what Tata Martino has shown us. He's very consistent in his calls, very consistent in his movements. Henry Martin played in 7 games of World Cup qualifying, all substitute appearances, but he scored some big goals for Tata Martino.
Yep. I like the idea of Henry Martin. I'm curious this, though. There's such a focus on only taking 3. You got 26 spots. Why not take 4, especially with Jimenez, who may well be, even at that point, an injury concern?
Yep. So I think that's the wild card. If Tata Martino believes that Raul Jimenez...
Doesn't mean he can't change his mind,
Sure.
Raul Jimenez will be 70-80% fit, right? And you can use him for the game against Saudi Arabia, where you're going to have your last chance to make it past the group stage. He might take 4. Mm-hmm. But as of now, Mauricio Imai, ESPN reporter who follows the Mexican national team, said last night that Raul Jimenez can't even train in the gym. He can't even do treadmill. He's not doing stationary bike. He can do anything right now. So it's a big, big concern that he'll be fit enough just to travel with the team.
Yep.
When you go and you look at Tata Martino's decision-making, he may say he's only taken 3, but every Mexican team, sans the 2002 team, took 4 9s.
Got to have your options at number 9. Mal, great stuff. Thanks for joining us here on Football America.
Anytime,
thank you,
guys.
Early wake-up call.
Waking up early.
It's tough, man.
I'm going to bed after this, by the way.
All right, then. Let's turn our attention to the women's game and some very important reporting done by ESPN. More from the women's game now. Bad news for Tobin Heath. She's out for the rest of the season after having surgery on her left knee. The 34-year-old had registered 1 goal and 5 assists since returning to the NWSL in June for OL Reign. Heath is a 2-time World Cup and 2-time Olympic champion with the U.S. women's national team, but they will be missing her with OL Reign for the rest of the campaign. Speaking of OL Reign, why don't we run it back, Herc? U.S. women's national team style. Do you know who else is on OL Reign?
Who?
Megan Rapinoe, her 6th goal of the season from the spot.
Yeah, very difficult for Megan Rapinoe to miss from the spot. Such a well-taken penalty kick. Keeper got frozen. That's what she does, man. Big moments.
Comes in a 1-0 win over Gotham FC on Wednesday. Megan Rapinoe converting from the spot for her 6th goal of the season. You know she's got those big goals in her. The game winner. She also has some fun in her game. Look at this.
This is a club ball trick, man. I almost wish she would have gone for the Meg right after that. You know, just a little bit more swag. But look at that.
Well, at least here she does it to her own teammate. I feel like you could really.
No, that's when you do it to your own team. It's a set play.
Maybe you do it to the other team to mess with them a little bit. Sophia Smith with her 12th goal of the season. here for Portland in a 3-0 win against Louisville.
Putting that pressure on Alex Morgan. Probably not going to be enough, Sav. But what an unbelievable season by Sophia Smith.
Yes, the golden boot race in the NWSL is heating up as we approach the final games of the season. More from Portland, because Sophia Smith not the only one that scored in that game. No, Sam Coffey. Yes, she also got on the score sheet 1 minute after Sophia Smith scored.
It's a great goal. Well-taken goal. Right to left in between traffic. There you go, slots at home. Good atmosphere, too.
Oh, you know they do it. Right with the Portland Thorns, 3-0 winners over Racing Louisville Wednesday night in NWSL action. Hey, I was at this game, Herc. The Football Americas Derby, Angel City against Washington. Angel City won the game 2-1. Big 3 points for them in the playoff chase. Ashley Hatch, though, with her 9th goal of the season.
Banner of a season for the Washington Spirit.
Easy, steady, steady. You like
thanks for the invite, Seb.
Team.
Thanks for the invite.
Oh, please. You're too cool for school. You want to come hang out with me and producer Beto at the Angel City game. Spain versus the U.S. Women's National Team could be very interesting. The Spanish Federation and the players at odds over the manager, Jorge Vilda. Will he still be in charge? Will the players be back? Should be a great game either way. That's Tuesday, October 11th, 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The U.S. Women's National Team back in action. All right, Herc, that's all the time we've got for this show. We are back Monday, back to our usually scheduled time, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. You know who's joining us?
Who?
Juan Carlos Osorio, the newest member of our team.
JCO!
We're going to break down the game between Mexico and Peru coming up on Saturday here in California. Thanks for watching us. Again, the United States falls 2-0 to Japan in Dusseldorf. We will have plenty more reaction to the weekend that was on Monday. We'll see you then.